Hey everybody, welcome back to Burger Bants, a podcast by Steak and Honour. My name's Charlie and I'm going to be your host for this series. Today it's episode 3 and I'm going to be talking with local food blogger Pina, or better known as 1-2 Culinary Stew. Hello Pina, thanks so much.
Hello, happy to be here.
Great, thank you. And so you've had a food blog for how many years now in Cambridge?
7 years?
Yeah,
seven years.
It was about 7 or 8 years.
Yeah.
So obviously you love food, you have a huge passion for food. So how did that all start for you? So tell us where you grew up, what you were eating as a child, and where this real passion for food started for you.
I was born into the restaurant business. So my father had a restaurant for 50 years. 45 years, and then it sold it, and then it ran for another 8 years, and he still worked there under like 3 different owners because they couldn't take it. So he ran 45 years, so I was born into it. It was a Jewish deli in Montreal, in an area called Côte Saint-Luc. And my parents are Italian. My father immigrated at the age of 20, and he had always worked in construction since the age of 10. That's what he did, and thought, that's what I'm going to do. And I think maybe the first winter, they were up on the roof working and freezing and looking down and seeing people going to work in restaurants where it's nice and warm.
Yeah.
And they're like, you know what, we should do that.
Yeah, and I can't feel my hands.
Yeah, exactly. I need to do something. Why are we doing this? And the delis were open 24 hours, the downtown ones and all that. And they were very much those smoked meat sandwiches, what we call your pastrami or salt beef.
Delicious.
And so they just did like crazy hours. And for 10 years between my brother and his brother, my dad and his brother, they had the restaurant. So they did that for 10 years and then they said, let's open up our own place. So I was born into the business.
So the restaurant that your father and your uncle had, so it was a restaurant, not a deli, or was it both?
Well, it's called a deli, but like in the sense of like, you know, the New York style delis.
Okay.
You know,
yeah,
so it's
yeah.
a deli, but it's not like a food shop.
It's not how we would.
We would call it like a diner, you know.
Yeah.
Like when it first opened, it was really old school. I mean, it was old school because it was 1962, but you know, they had the counter and the booths and all that.
Love that.
Later on, they expanded and made more like a restaurant. But yeah, so when you say deli, it's like a diner, just like a really casual diner, you know, where you go in and you have
counter sandwiches, coffee.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, and whatever menu there was, you know, there was obviously the smoked meat sandwiches and all the Jewish delicacies, you know, latkes and potato conditions and all this stuff, and just burgers and pizza, and you know, it was just a family
like a neighborhood place.
Yeah, in Côte Saint-Luc, which is a sort of Jewish area. William Shatner's from there as well, so he's like
claim to fame.
My dad hung out with William Shatner. But yeah, so we had that already, so I was born into that. So
and that was open 24 hours.
It was open, not 24 hours, but it was open in the morning until
late,
probably 11 or 12, and then my dad would stay late and do all the orders for the next day, all the catering and stuff like that. So my uncle did the morning shift and my dad would start. He would leave the house around noon. He would wake up at 11, leave the house at noon, go and pick up the afternoon orders, you know, the bread. You can identify with all this stuff,
stuff
behind the scenes. And then he'd start probably around 4 and then work until probably 4, and that was 7 days a week.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah.
What was it called?
It was called Famous Deli Boys. It just got to be known as Deli Boys, and then just FDB because, you know, the language laws in Quebec couldn't be English. But I just thought it was really funny because, you know, they started this restaurant, you know, and they called it Famous Deli Boys. It just kind of goes to show, like, yeah, it's going to be famous.
Have that courage, have that belief that it is. I love that.
And it was famous because, you know, even everyone who was from that area knew it. They said, oh, your dad owns Deli Boys. And even when I moved to Toronto, and I worked with a lot of people from Montreal, and they'd be like, your dad owns Deli Boys. I used to go there all the time after baseball. And so, yeah, there was a source of pride there, even though he worked all the time and he was
definitely.
Never home. But
yeah, pride and like ownership. It's lovely.
Yeah, so he always would bring home, you know, whatever there was. So, you know, or anything that he served, that, you know, there was smoked meat or little challah bread buns. You know, I used to have that for lunch every day, smoked meat with challah bread. And I went to like an Italian high school and everybody was like, how come you're not having mortadella sandwiches with panini? And it's like, wow.
My dad owns the deli.
Yeah,
so. You
know. Yeah. And so I sort of grew up on that food. And then, you know, being Italian, my mom would make, you know, lasagna and things like that. So, you know, homemade stuff.
What's your like one dish that you remember from your childhood that either like your mum would make or your dad, or a family dish that you're like, it's just, you know, encompasses your childhood?
I think, you know, with my mom making homemade lasagna, and she would always do it like a special occasions because it was quite laborious, you know, and I remember her making the dough and rolling it in the machine and all that. And, you know, she had more time before. My grandmother came to live with us later on. She was blind. So, and then when my grandfather died, so she lived with us. So my mother was quite limited with her
time-wise,
time.
Yeah.
So we did depend more on my dad bringing stuff home. So it was really sort of a combination of both. But I think, you know, the comfort dishes like the lasagna with the meat sauce and the mozzarella and tomatoes. And
so good.
And then, of course, my dad bringing home, you know, smoked meat. And he used to have a kitchen as well. He had a kitchen, a unit where he made all the homemade cakes. And it was things like strawberry cheesecake. Mm. If you think about the New York style ones where they're sort of dry and but they're not like jelly, you know. And they were really, really tall, and they were quite famous. And like key lime pie and chocolate pie and lemon meringue, and he would bring those home, whatever was left over, danishes and the bread and
such a treat. That's the dream, right?
Yeah, I didn't even think about it. It was just there. Yeah, it's like he just brought home stuff and be like, and he became quite well known for these things called party sandwiches. And
they're finger sandwiches. What's in a party sandwich?
They're finger sandwiches. So you would order them because you had a party or something. But they fit exactly in like a little box. And the way he would arrange them would fit exactly like a square. So there'd be like rolled ones with like cream cheese and salmon. And then there'd be like, you know, tuna ones that were cut into like little finger sandwiches, but completely symmetrical and cut and stacked. So they would fit in that box and you would just slide out the plastic and they would be there and then you would rearrange them. And those are so addictive, and they were so popular, and that's pretty much why he worked late every night, because he would make these party sandwiches for all kinds of events, or you know, even funerals and things like that. The shiva trays for the Jewish funerals and all that. It's just quite a lot of food and a lot of catering.
So, did you used to work in the deli?
I did as a teenager. I did. I mean, at 13, I remember sort of going in and my dad going, you know, try this, do the counter. It was like there was like four seats or something. I was like, oh my God, I'm not going to make it. I was so shy. And I'm like, can I take your order? You know, and it was quite easy because I just had the counter and then I just had to kind of like peek into the kitchen and say, you know, can I get fries or whatever? But I think at 15, 16, I worked more in the summers and I ended up, I preferred doing the till. Sitting at the till and answering the phone and taking the takeaway orders and doing the till. And I think that was really... that was a better fit for me. My older sister was like waitressing and all that. She was really good at that, balancing all the plates on her arms.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, yeah.
I was more like, I'll sit at the till. And to this day, I know how to count change backwards because it wasn't, it was just all manual. You counted, you know, you had the old fashioned register and you would stick in the little thing and like stamp everything and then be like, you know, $6.40 and you'd count backwards, you know.
So it was a real family restaurant, family place that you know, in your teens, you say your sister was working there, you were your dad, and also your uncle as well.
Yeah, my uncle and then my cousins as well, all three of them, his kids as well. My younger sister sort of got away with it for a bit. I think by the time she was old enough, there was age difference. Yeah, she probably had gone in a couple of times, but it was more like me and my sister. Yeah,
that's it. Just sounds idyllic. It sounds kind of like a film. Almost, you know, like when you see these places kind of in American films of the counters and
I wish
and
I
that
had
whole
more
life.
Photos.
You no, have got have one, haven't photos. You? Have you put one up that you found or something?
I have a photo of my dad.
A black
dad.
And white one.
There's a black and white one of my dad holding a huge tray of bagels that we would go pick up with a big smile on his face. And I think it was St. Viator Bagel, which is quite a big famous place. And then I found some old footage of my uncle, and he must have been about 16 years old, working at one of the delis where he got all his sort of experience from. And it was featured in like a CBC documentary or something at the time. And they used this footage for a news report about, it was just something random about people buying smoked meat and microwavable. Mm. And it just came across and was like, my cousin found it. He was just looking like, how to microwave smoked meat?
That's
and then
really
he
sweet.
Saw his dad.
Wait,
And we tried to figure out where it was. I think we sort of tried to piece by what he looked like and where it was because he worked at a few places. Mm. But what a great find. And then when he passed away, like, you know, a few months ago, it was so nice to have that and do like a little tribute and say, you know, where it came from, because you know, I mean, the business was their lives. It was, you know, it was 45 years. Mm. It was, you know, it's difficult to work with with your family, but it is what it is. Mm. You know, it's a source of pride. they worked really hard. Mm. And my father never retired. He was like, yeah, okay, we're going to sell them in 2007. And he did. But at first, the stipulation was, part of the sale was like, he needs to be there for I don't know how many months or whatever for the, you know, the handover to teach. And he just never left because the customers still wanted to see him. So he just kept going. He just never retired. And it lasted another 8 years after that till 2015 until it actually was gone for good. Like, it had to close because the landlords made it, like, they sold it. So it became a police station now. It's completely gone. It's really
sad.
That's
kind of sad. Yeah. That is kind of sad. It would have been, even in some different incarnation, it still would have been nice to have it as a food or a restaurant or something.
Yeah, we had a good 8 years after, so you can't.
So is that where you're, because you're so passionate about independent businesses, obviously, especially independent food businesses in Cambridge, and you've been so supportive of our business over the years, which we're so appreciative of. So, I mean, this must have stemmed from having this amazing family business that you all were involved in and was, you know, I suppose for your father, an all-consuming business. You know how important it is for loyalty, you know, within kind of the small business industry.
Yeah, I think that's one thing about the blog. I mean, I started the blog as just, actually, it was just to do recipes. And then it was like, the food scene in Cambridge was like really blooming. And then I realized, oh, there's all these great independents coming up. And I think I've always had the perspective of doing it, of coming, I never wanted to be a critic or do reviews. You know, I do give feedback and things like that. And sometimes I post publicly about it. I try to stay positive. If there's anything, I contact the businesses, you know, directly if they want the feedback.
I was talking about this with someone actually, the right way to do it, the wrong way to do it, or how we would see as a business owner, the right way, wrong way. And we were saying, so I knew that about you, that if you have an issue that you will go direct to the business before you publicly would post anything and ultimately try and get any issue resolved kind of offline. Which I think is personally completely the right thing to do, because it's so easy to post something really negative just because you want to. And when it is a new business, and again, this is where I think you have that understanding that maybe other people don't, who aren't aware, it's a small business, it's usually one or two people working there, and sometimes even something really small that's negative can impact that business. And I think sometimes, you know, people need to be kind of mindful of that when they're then kind of writing a review, kind of like, you know, off the bat, just, oh, this was really awful. And I think having that kind of awareness and being trying to resolve things or contacting people privately is a really kind of respectful thing to do.
Yeah, I never wanted to be about like doing reviews and scoring systems and all that. I just wanted to share my experience. If there is something that I feel could be constructive or whatever, and the reviews do need to be balanced, because if it's always glowing, people just go, oh, like...
Well, exactly,
Just, you know, balanced review or just my experiences. Sometimes there's negative things that come up, and I put them because I think it could be really constructive, and sometimes it's necessary for... But it's very rare that I do that, but it's just, I just have... I kind of weigh it and decide whether I'm going to say anything or not, and if a business is brand new, if it's brand new and they're just starting, I don't think it's fair to do a review. Like, I will post about, like, I went to, like, the opening or something like that. But if there's anything that's quite not right or whatever, it's their first day. It's actually, it's a trial. So there's no point bringing up any of that.
Yeah.
You just have to look at the potential of it and all that, you know. And you have to expect it to be not perfect. And a lot of times it is, actually, because it's so good and you're just like, they're so professional. So, but I think it's kind of unfair to do a review right away of a brand new business because they just haven't had the time to just
adjust. So much as well.
Yeah, there's so many things. I think what people don't understand, I guess because, like you said, I come from that. Everything that goes into just opening the doors, everything that goes into like how you have to, you know, staff and supply. And people just think there's just like an endless supply of everything, of resources, and it's like you have to work really hard to do that. And sometimes you're training people, or it's a bad day, or your supplier let you down, or just something.
Yeah.
And I do think that, you know, I think as a Canadian, I'm not afraid to bring up things if it's not right. Like, I will say, you know, this is not right, can you return it to the kitchen, or, you know, and I'm very polite about it, and I give feedback about it.
Yeah.
You know, when it's necessary. If it's just okay, it's okay. But I think businesses want to have a chance to put it right, and I think it's fair to tell them, but you have to do it in a polite, respectful way, and understanding that, you know, and they're happy to do it. And I think a lot of people are scared because they think like, oh God, I'll never be able to come back here, or they're going to think I'm horrible. But it's like, no, that's like the British thing. It's like, you know, and I do that in Canada all the time. Like, I think about it more here because I realize it's not quite as accepted. Mm. But when I go to Canada, and like with Paulo, like my husband is British, like I returned a steak once because it was like practically raw. He's like, oh my God, you returned it. I'm like, look, it's absolutely fine. They were very happy about it. They gave me a new one. They refreshed all the veggies. I said, look, it was no big deal. And he's like, yeah, it is no big deal. I said, mm-hmm. but I wanted to, you know, I spend a lot of money on this steak, so.
I want it to be nice.
Yeah, it's your steakhouse, so get it right.
I think that's completely correct. I think you can be unhappy with something and be completely respectful and polite and nice about the fact that it didn't meet your expectations. Yeah. And I think as a business owner, I would completely take that on the chin. It's not, you can't expect every single person to love and adore what you do, because that's just not life as well. So people may not, they're expect, and you don't know what people's expectations are. You know, you don't know where they sit. And I think, you know, it's just, and if from our point of view, it's about dealing in the right way as well. Yeah. And yeah, of course, if something's not quite right, of course you'd say, we're really sorry about that. We have really high standards. It sounds like that wasn't up to standard and we apologize. You know, I think it definitely works both ways, doesn't it? With how, if something's not quite right, how you go about it, and then the business owner also responding in the right way, which is not going to alienate then the person and potentially then more people as well.
Yeah, I mean, it says a lot about the business. So if you, and I wouldn't return something and say just because I don't like the taste of it.
Yeah.
Like, I have to realize, like, if I ordered this, this is what it tastes like. You know, if it's matcha, that's going to taste like that. I'm going to say, oh, this is rubbish. It's like, it's matcha or whatever.
Yeah.
So I will only return things like undercooked or overcooked or not, you know, but it's rare that ever happens. But, you know, they want the opportunity to do it right. And if their reaction is like rolling their eyes and, you know, and they don't do anything to sort of acknowledge it or make you feel valued or appreciate that you've, that says more about the business than it does about me. So, you know, I'm just not going to go back there, am I?
Yeah, exactly.
You know, I'm not going to go and, you know, rant about it. You know, but yeah, people do talk in the foodie community. So, you know, word of mouth is not just because I, you know, I have a public platform that I should be, you know, respected or listened to or whatever. You know, any customer, word of mouth is really important. It's not just really about important. Going online and writing a blog and doing an Instagram post.
Yeah,
that's absolutely. What people have to realize. Every single person is going to talk about where they went and what experience they had. And that includes like terrible service, rude service.
Absolutely.
So important.
It is. Yeah. It is really important. And I think you're right, word of mouth is still really, really important in this day and age. You know, everything is on social media, everything is out there.
Yeah.
But actually, I'll listen to my mate over probably someone that I don't know on the internet who's in a review of the same place. You're going to listen to someone that you know or that you have a connection with in real life. I would anyway, more than looking at a review on social media. So I think word of mouth is huge. And really important, and that's why you said everything's got to be right. It's not just the food, is it? It is the whole experience. It's having the food to be right, service to be right, everything kind of around it. Which I think in Cambridge, you know, from my experience, we've got it good. There's so many good places doing extremely great food and really good people doing it. And I think we are a bit spoiled now. You know, like a few years ago, like when you started your blog, it would have been maybe a bit different. There wasn't so many independents. You think there's been an increasing kind of independence. Yeah. And
Mill Road is just booming, and I think it's probably where you get, you know, the most reasonably priced units. So anything in central Cambridge, I mean, you know, well done for getting this place, because it's not easy, is it, to get anything that's centrally located?
Yeah,
it's insane. So yeah, so there's a lot more. I think Mill Road has changed a lot, a lot, and it's like probably, you know, the foodie spot for independence.
Yeah. What places do you love in Cambridge? I know it might be like Sophie's Choice for you here, but if there are any places that you're like consistently like, this place is great, I love.
You're not going to believe me, because people ask me that, like, as a foodie, like, what's the best restaurant? What's your favorite?
I'm just saying, give me a few that you like, because I know it's so hard to say one thing.
I always say the food trucks, because I actually probably enjoy the food trucks the most, because I get the variety and the food's really good. You know, so to Steak and Honor. But I always say Steak and Honor is like, you know, if I had to choose like the best place and the best food.
Stop
I know it sounds like, but this is absolutely true. You can ask people. But yeah, there's I mean, it really depends what you're looking for. Restaurant 22 is just a fantastic place, and you know, it deserves a Michelin star. It needs to have a Michelin star.
I've only been once there.
Yeah. Only been once. Yeah.
We were before lockdown, before like the proper lockdown, before Christmas. We managed to get in, and we had a lovely meal. Yeah, it was just gorgeous. It was really lovely, really intimate, fantastic service. Yeah, yeah, I mean, it's spot really on. You can't
gem.
Really fault
it's a gem, and it's run by a couple that you know, chef and. I mean, it's just, it has everything to it, you know, and it's in a house and it's understated and it's just beautiful food.
Yeah.
And then, you know, I just love good cafes and good cake and good cup of tea, or my husband's the coffee drinker. I love Relevant Records. I mean, we used to just hang out at Relevant Records all the time. It was the perfect combo. My husband going in the basement and looking through all the records, and I'm sitting there with a great, you know, slice of cake or a sandwich or something.
That's at the bottom end of Mill Road, isn't it?
Yeah. On the other side.
The other side of the bridge. Yeah.
You know, and then like Tradizioni, like little Italian restaurants. So yeah, there's lots, and there's new ones now that I still need to try. So I've been to Finboy's.
Yeah.
But I need to try their their dinner service.
I've not had dinner there. I've had lunch there, which we really enjoyed.
Yeah. Really nice. And it used to be like the Oxfam shop.
It did.
It'd be like, used to go like buy vinyl here and records.
They've made it look gorgeous. It looks fantastic. Yeah. We've actually also bought quite a bit of fish from them and had it on the barbecue and stuff. And we had these amazing prawns. We're getting some today, I think, to eat the weekend. Huge prawns, which were unreal. We had them just on the barbecue, and they were delicious.
The quality of the seafood's amazing. They had the delivery through lockdown,
so
we tried some of their some of their seafood and oysters.
I think that's definitely something that I've noticed in Cambridge at the moment is happening. There's oysters everywhere. There seems to be seafood and oysters and a kind of pot, and that was just something that a year ago there wasn't any, and now you can just get fresh Mersey Island oysters
every day of the week. As well, sushi. Yeah. When I first moved here, I was like, where do you go for sushi? We got it's everywhere. We got sticks and sushi across here.
Yeah,
and we got it's everywhere. It's changed quite a lot. So, but yeah, there's so many good places. I still need to try Kingston Arms.
I've been with the new
which is quite a famous chef in Tel Aviv. He's quite understated about it, but he's been looking for somewhere for ages, and it's hummus and wines and all like lovely plates. So I need to try that still. So I feel like I'm just starting getting out now, really. I spend a lot on delivery, so Click It Local and your burger kits. Oh my God, they saved us. Every time we had a craving, if I couldn't get to a food truck or something, it was like make it at home, and we enjoy it, so.
Yeah, you guys, your reels have been brilliant.
Really enjoyed them. The Sid Vicious.
Yeah. Yeah, I think Click It Local has been great for lockdown. I think that was such a good asset to Cambridge. Obviously, it's branched out hugely now, but I think that was, I used it a lot as well, just getting kind of independent stuff in that I wouldn't ever go. I'm ordering stuff that I wouldn't even go and get, even if I wasn't in lockdown, so that's been...
And for me, just living, not... Just outside the deliveries. I'm just a few miles out, never quite can get, the deliveries. Mm. So it was really good that they delivered to my area and they expanded. So there was a lot. And I even did, grocery shopping and fruit and veg, everything. So
yeah, that's amazing.
That was good, yeah.
Right, well, I'm going to ask you the question that we ask everyone, which is, Pina, what's the best burger you've ever had? Where was it? Who were you with? And what was in it?
Well, it's definitely going to be Steak and Honor, because I just love the burgers. I
always say,
I always say though, it is. I mean, when it was just amazing. It was just like I saw your truck back then. It was 2013, and I think I was following you on Twitter, and it was through my business account because I didn't even have my blog then. I was like, we've got to follow this van. And then finally we found you at Burwash Manor in Barton, and you were there, and we got the classic, and it just was like the perfect burger. And I think I would say that's my favorite burger. Just something addictive about just all the flavors and the textures. And I'm convinced that those squiggles of mustard and ketchup, that it's like artistic to it too. Yeah, I know you can do it because I've seen you.
Yeah,
I
still
got it. We're trying to do it and we can't do it. We're trying to do Steak and Honor squiggles and we can't do it.
You get RSI. When you do too many of them, you literally get RSI in your wrist, because you have to squeeze them out.
It just, the fact that the meat is just meat, there's no fillers in it and everything. And it's actually a satisfying burger. It has a good amount of meat and you've got the texture from the lettuce and the onion and the pickle and just like tangy, tart flavors. And back then it was the more the brioche bun.
Yes.
And I do like the new grain culture milk buns. They're really like robust.
They are.
And they still have that squishiness and you can still steam them and it has a heavier base. And when you're making them now, they can totally appreciate, you know, how you make them, you know, the steaming them and all that.
That's the key. That's
like the whole thing could just fall apart.
Yeah.
But it's never quite the same as like, you know, when Leo does it. Because, you know, that's his creation. I know that everything that he did, including the squiggles and all the layering and all that, I'm sure that is completely just like done in a way that it has the maximum flavor and texture and enjoyment, you know?
Yeah. I mean, when we started, it's almost like nothing, you're completely right, nothing was left to chance. It wasn't like, it was like, oh, we'll just throw this into a bun and hope it tastes good. It was, we went to the baker's, I was pregnant with my eldest, and I remember going to see the then baker, Chris, on my way to one of my scans and being like, we need to go because we've got an appointment at the hospital. But I remember going and it was a conversation, it was a dialogue about, I need a burger bun and this is kind of what I'm thinking, and then him going, okay, doing what sample, can you make it, you know. It was very much a dialogue with Chris the baker, then we John the butcher from the Art of Meat, who we still use, again a dialogue, what we want, this, what do you think, you know. And it was, every part of it was thought out, although yes, we used Heinz tomato ketchup and French's mustard. But Leo made his own ketchup because at one point it was like, oh, well, should we make our own ketchup and do it? And then decided that it was a lot of hard work for not a lot of product. And actually, you know, if you work out financially the work into it, with what you get out, it was not worth it. But yeah, you're right. It was created. It wasn't just kind of fallen upon in that way. And like the classic and the cheeseburger and the shroom are exactly the same. They're not changed. They're exactly, if you had one on the first day that we traded, it would taste exactly the same as it does today.
I love the cheese, you know, the American cheese or whatever. It's just perfect. It's not quite the plasticky cheap one, but it's, you know, it's just perfect. Yeah, it's perfect. And also what I remember is I think you were the first one. I think it was you who served me. And
possibly
you were just so nice and friendly and like cool about everything, because I was like, oh my god, steak and butter, oh my god, I don't know, you just feel like, I don't know. And you were just like, yeah. And I still have photos of that, like,
you do,
you know. And there was the different van, it was like more was like a darker white. Red with white.
It was so cold that day. I remember how I was freezing, and in that picture I think I've got about 5 layers on and like just like fluffy boots. It was like, it was so cold. But yeah, I love those kind of those memories. It's great. I love the fact that you really like a classic, though. Because you do like just a classic, don't you? And I think before I've been like, oh, okay.
With cheese, yeah. Sometimes I like the cheese when I feel like I want a bit creaminess. But it's just like, it's like one of those things where you have a craving for steak and onion. Mm-hmm. It's got to be the classic.
Yeah. That's it.
Yeah. And then once in a while, like if we have it like more often, then we're like, okay, we'll change it up a bit, you know.
Treat ourselves, Manella today or whatever.
It's something like a bar or something.
Yeah, too hot for me, that one. It's too hot for me. Well, thank you so much for coming on.
Oh, thank you so much for asking me. I'm so chuffed. I mean, I never would imagine like 8 years ago that.
No, this is great.
When I had my first burger, I'd be sitting here doing a podcast. Yeah.
No, it's brilliant. I love hearing about your.
I'm really honored. Thank you so much.
No, it's great. I love hearing about your. I knew a bit about your dad and your uncle, but you know, not. I didn't really know kind of the whole stories, so that thank you for sharing that with us.
Oh, it's really nice too, because they're both gone and the restaurant's gone, and so it's actually nice to
reminisce.
Yeah, I wish I had more photos that I can share, you know. I could have created an Instagram account to keep sort of the, you know, the old, but I don't have anything. Everybody's just too busy to take photos,
so, of course. He's just working too hard.
Yeah.
Do you have recipes? Have you got recipes that both of your dad and your uncle?
Not really. And I mean, all those cakes were like industrial size recipes, so there's probably somewhere, but I don't know, you'd have to sort of translate them into like sort of, you know, manageable
reduce
ones.
Reduce them by 50.
Yeah. So I don't know, I'll talk to my cousin maybe. But yeah.
Oh, well, thank you so much, Pina.
You're welcome.
We'll let you go now. So Pina's now going to go and have a dot hot chicken burger.
Yes, dying to try it. Yes.
Thank you so much. We'll see you guys again really soon for another episode. Thanks for joining us. See ya.
You can follow Pina on Instagram at 12culinarystew and read her blog over at www.12culinarystew.com. Join us next week for episode 4.